AM and FM, Seattle.
CBS News. A staunch governmental conservative wants to make Uncle Sam the employer of last resort to put the jobless back to work. I'm Jerry Landay, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. As chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, Dr. Arthur Burns' job is to regulate the money supply and thus the interest you pay on loans and mortgages. Liberals have criticized Burns for being too orthodox. But Friday night, Dr. Burns formally embraced a liberal cause. He told an audience at the University of Georgia he wants the government to create a public service jobs program broad enough to give work to anybody who wants it. Burns denies his is a radical scheme. It rests, he said, on the simple but neglected fact that work is better than the dole. Burns would pay those on the program slightly less than the minimum wage as an incentive for them to seek regular employment. He disagrees the government can't afford such a program, maintaining it would pay for itself by taking the jobless off the unemployment compensation rolls and reducing the cost of related government programs. Now this.
If you ever use a hemorrhoid preparation, you should know this. Vaseline Brands has news. It's Hemorrhoid Ointment. Hemorrhoid works fast, helps protect with a proven medical ingredient for soothing occlusion. And Hemorrhoid gives you only this key ingredient, so it gives you more than the leading preparation. Now at your first sign of pain, burning, and itching, turn to soothing Hemorrhoid. Hemorrhoid from Vaseline Brands. Use only as directed.
Hear ye, hear ye. Patrick Henry, CBS News correspondent Charles Kuralt has a letter for you.
I've written a letter to you, Patrick Henry, the angry young man of the American Revolution, telling you how things turned out in this country. And I'm afraid it's just going to make you angry all over again.
Charles Kuralt's letter to Patrick Henry is one of 30 letters to the American past. You bicentennial special, September 20th and 21st, on the CBS Radio Network.
The Los Angeles Times reports that Patricia Hearst will probably be tried on state robbery and kidnapping charges in Los Angeles before she faces federal bank robbery charges in San Francisco. Authorities are said to believe the California case is stronger because of legal and evidentiary problems involved in the bank robbery case, including the possibility Hearst at that point was acting under duress. In San Francisco Friday, Hearst was ordered held without bail, at least temporarily, on the federal charges. Emily and William Harris were also ordered held because they cannot meet their bail. The Army reveals three employees died between 1951 and 1974 while working at the Biological Warfare Laboratory at Fort Detrick, Maryland, and that the cause of two of the deaths were covered up. The two contracted fatal cases of anthrax. Death was attributed in one case to pneumonia, in another to respiratory disease. After 2 weeks under a new school desegregation plan, Greater Louisville, Kentucky marks a milestone this weekend. Chris Kelly reports.
There was no trouble as the Louisville area began its first weekend since the riots 2 weeks ago without reinforcements of soldiers and policemen. At Southern High, where school buses were burned and smashed, county officers stood by while two dozen people waving anti-busing signs walked about near the school. They were peaceful and quiet, but not the cars driving up and down the neon strip. Drivers honked their horns, a popular anti-busing gesture here. Policemen also guarded Valley High School, but there was no activity there at all. There'll be some activity in the city Saturday morning. At least two anti-busing marches are scheduled. Chris Kelly, CBS News, Louisville.
Portugal has a new government, its sixth in 17 months. Premier José Pinheiro de Azevedo succeeded in building a cabinet in which civilian and military moderates predominate, the communists virtually sidelined with only one post. The new government sworn in officially Friday. More news in a moment.
Read Praise the Human Caesar, the book all America is calling a masterpiece, the novel that everyone has fallen in love with. Praise the Human Caesar. Praise the Human Caesar, the big and richly detailed story of two people sharing a lifetime of love and experiences. It's the paperback the critics have called a memorable love story, a celebration of the joys of life, and a tribute to the imperishable human spirit. Praise the Human Caesar is truly this year's most captivating story. If you believe in love, you will want to read Don Robertson's Praise the Human Season, a Ballantine book at bookstores, newsstands, and wherever paperbacks are sold. Ask for Praise the Human Season and really enjoy a book again.
Secretary of State Henry Kissinger hosted a working dinner in Washington for his Soviet counterpart Friday night. Afterwards, Minister Andrei Gromyko, indicating to newsmen the Soviet Union continues to remain opposed to the step-by-step approach toward an overall Middle Eastern settlement being masterminded by Kissinger. Earlier, Kissinger indicated the Soviet Union and the United States may complete by the end of the year a long-term agreement for the purchase of Russian oil. Kissinger linking that announcement with a warning to the oil-producing states that continued price increases may well lose them the American market. The oil ministers of those states meet next week in Vienna to set new prices. Friday, the Shah of Iran said he favors an increase of 15%, which would mean still higher energy prices here. I'm Jerry Landay, CBS News.
CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. The belief in ghosts and apparitions is as ancient as man himself. And a ghost, as we all know, can take many forms and shapes. Most of these spirits return from an unhappy grave and haunt the living, malevolently, revengefully, dangerously. But occasionally, a ghost will turn up who is kindly, good-natured, and rather nice to have around the house. Our story involves just such a ghost.
Cousin Amy, come quickly, quickly.
What's wrong, Susan?
There's a strange man in this room, Cousin Amy, or was just a moment ago.
Where? Where did you see him?
Standing there, right in the middle of the room, in front of my dressing glass, staring at me in my nightgown and wrapper. I was terrified.
What did he look like?
His clothes were of the strangest fashion. And his neck.
Yes?
His neck was twisted. The head was tilted over to one side, as though the head were just barely attached to the rest of the body. Oh, you've got to stay the night with me right here in my bedroom.
Oh, of course. I wouldn't think of leaving you.
We are not alone in this house, believe me. There is a third person here. Somewhere.
Our mystery drama, The Third Person, is based on the Henry James classic and was especially adapted for the Mystery Theater by Stella and Arnold Moss. It stars Marion Seldes and E.V. Jester. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Sinoff, the sinus medicines. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
The following fable is presented to make you want to buy a Buick.
As a kid, everything I had was somebody else's.
My, he certainly has his mother's eyes.
And his father's hair. Boy, what a hairy little person. Well, I finally got something to call my own. A beautiful Buick LeSabre. With my kind of room, my kind of ride, and my kind of style. Heck, I even let my dad borrow it now and then. Because I love to hear people say, My, he certainly has his son's Buick.
Buick, dedicated to the free spirit in just about everyone.
Last month, I noticed my oldest boy. He seemed so much older. I spent a lot of time away from home, but boy, that was a shock. He's growing up without me. I figured if I was going to have any influence in his life at all, I'd better start now. So I set aside one night a week, and each week I take a different child, and we go and do whatever they want. And you know, it's amazing what it's done for the kids. And me.
Give your children everything. Give them your time. A thought from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons.
Here's a tip from your Better Business Bureau on the metric system. You know, the worldwide trend today is toward a universal system of measurement, the metric system. The names of this new system may sound strange to you at first, but fortunately, there are only a few words that have to be learned for everyday use, and these are the millimeter, centimeter, meter, and kilometer for describing length and distance, the milliliter and liter for capacity or volume, the gram, kilogram, and ton for weight, the kilometer per hour for highway speed, and the degree Celsius or centigrade for temperature. You're already using some of these terms more than you may realize. For example, when you go to the supermarket, you see weights expressed in grams on more and more packaged items. Now, for more information on this whole metric system, write to Metric Information Office, National Bureau of Standards, Washington, D.C.
The year is 1900. In a neat little village on the seacoast in New England, Miss Susan Frush is a rather shy lady in her early 40s. With her well-fastened hat, her white gloves, her sturdy walking shoes, she is what might be called the typical old maid. She has the appearance of once having been pretty, but this is now obscured somewhat by eyeglasses and teeth. Her kinswoman, Miss Amy Frush, 10 years Miss Susan's junior, is brisk, eager, comparatively bold, and equally unhusbanded. Until this morning, these second cousins have never before met. Now they sit rather primly and a little terrorized in the parlor of an old and roomy mansion to which they have been summoned by a Mr. Willoughby, attorney at law.
Miss Susan Frush?
Yes.
You are Susan Frush?
Oh, yes. Yes, I'm Susan Frush.
Thank you. And you are Miss Amy Frush?
Oh, yes, indeed, I certainly am.
Thank you. Ladies, you are both aware of why you are here. As the sole remaining heirs of your great-aunt, the late Miss Abigail Frush, recently deceased at the age of 94, you two are the rightful legatees in equal shares of her entire properties.
Do you mean, sir, that all...
I mean, madam, that as executor of the late Miss Abigail's worldly estate, I hereby declare you, Miss Susan Frush, and you, Miss Amy Frush, the sole beneficiaries. The largest single item of her benevolence is, of course, this house.
You mean this house now belongs to the two of us?
To me and to Cousin Amy?
Well, after a few legal documents are properly signed. If you ladies will permit me to say so, Miss Abigail's generosity has been most remarkable, particularly in view of the fact that you are both unprotected, without the care of solicitude of husbands.
Aunt Abigail has indeed been generous.
Well, since, as I understand, you are both almost strangers to each other, you may not wish to share this house between you. The will directs that the house may be sold to your joint advantage. Are there any questions?
No, I don't think so.
Miss Susan?
You've made everything quite clear, thank you.
Well, in that case, I shall take the liberty of escorting you about the house and indicating some of its features. The high points, we might say, of this old mansion. It consists, as you shall see, of 37 rooms, 12 of which are bedrooms.
12 bedrooms?
For just the two of us.
On the second floor, shared by the two largest of these bedrooms, installed some 15 years ago, is a marvel of this modern age in which we live.
And that, Mr. Willoughby, is...
There. With all the latest paraphernalia and conveniences of indoor plumbing, is the bathroom.
Oh.
Yes. Imagine, ladies, the luxury of an indoor bathroom with running water.
But what's that?
What is what?
Do you hear anything, Cousin Amy?
Yes, I do. It sounds as though someone were running a bath in our luxurious indoor bathroom.
Well, now that you've seen the principal features of the house, I remind you again that the will permits you to sell it, should you be so minded.
Oh, I wouldn't think of it, Mr. Willoughby. This dear old house is exactly everything I ever dreamed of. And you, Cousin Amy?
Oh, I wouldn't part with it for all the money in the world. It's beautiful.
Having drunk deep of the cup of singleness, which I confess is a rather bitter cup, this house represents a quiet, peaceful harbor. Our solitude will come to an end.
And, of course, with an assured roof over your heads.
I adore every inch of it. I'm sure the two of us will get along splendidly.
As am I. But you must understand, of course, that I take a nap after dinner.
Really? I could never rest then. That's when I'm most wide awake and keenest for talk. I take my nap just before dinner.
But I'm sure we can arrange our time suitably. And there'll be so many things to talk about. So many things we can do together.
Yes. Well, I take it then that you ladies are fully prepared to share the house.
Oh, yes,
of course.
Well, so be it. I am delighted that this charming house will remain where it's been for almost 200 years. In the hands of the Frush family. Well, now, if we may continue with the inspection, I have saved this main entry hall for the last of our little tour. Impressive?
Just look at all those full-length portraits. But those paintings must be...
Are they all who we think they are?
Frushes. Every single one of them.
They are all of them our ancestors, Cousin Susan.
Yes, indeed they are.
Oh, that fat one with powdered wig in the big pot belly. He's so funny. Who is he?
That is Josiah Frush, the man who built this house in the year 1731. A prince among merchants.
And that one, the one in the colorful uniform.
Colonel Benjamin Frush served with the greatest distinction under Sir William Pepperwell in King George's War, 1745.
I remember reading about him.
Oh, isn't that perfectly thrilling? A great hero.
And so romantic. Mm. Oh, who's that stern-looking one? The one with the frown.
That is Elbridge Frush. Lawyer... Jurist, educator, political leader. One of the founding fathers of this commonwealth. First president of Frush University.
And that one. Cousin Susan, just look at him.
Which one?
The one to the right of the door. Dressed in the clothes of the American Revolution. Isn't he just the handsomest man you have ever seen in your entire life? And so young.
He is beautiful. Oh. Those piercing blue eyes seem to penetrate right into you.
Do they not?
But those eyes are so sad.
Which one of the Frushes is he, Mr. Willoughby?
That, ladies, is young Cuthbert Frush.
Cuthbert? I don't seem to remember hearing about him. When did he live?
In the 1770s.
What did he do?
What was he famous for?
You must pardon me, ladies. This is one subject I do not care to discuss.
Another cup of tea, Cousin Amy.
If you don't mind, Cousin Susan. What a wonderful day this has been. First thing tomorrow morning, I shall start delving into the complete history of all of our ancestors. Find out everything I can about each of them. Cousin Susan.
Yes?
The portrait to the right of the main entry.
Cousin Cuthbert.
Mm. There's something strange and fascinating about the expression on his handsome face. Mr. Willoughby knows more, I think, than he was willing to say.
I must agree with you.
Mm. Let's be perfectly frank, Cousin Susan. Doesn't that look in Cuthbert's eyes do something to you?
Really, Cousin Amy, I haven't the slightest idea.
Oh, come, dear cousin. You said yourself that his eyes seemed to look right into you.
I suppose I did, didn't I? But they are sad and so melancholy looking. They seem to be saying, help me, please. I need you desperately.
Exactly the feeling they gave me. Have you any idea why Mr. Willoughby was so reluctant to discuss Cousin Cuthbert?
Do you hear anything?
Music of some kind.
Somebody's whistling.
It's Yankee Doodle. Seems to be coming from that window. Come, let's see.
Oh, please be very careful, Cousin Amy. Open the drapes slowly.
Cousin Susan, quickly. Quickly, come here at once.
What is it? What's wrong?
Look out there, in the dark. Do you see what I see?
Where?
Up there, among the branches of that huge tree.
It can't be. Do you suppose it... Oh,
it is the face and head of Cuthbert Frush, tilted over to one side.
Floating in the air.
Bathed in a kind of eerie blue light.
Just his head and face, nothing more.
Without a body.
I can't believe it. And his eyes seem to be pleading for something.
Just exactly the way it is in the portrait.
I will not look at it. Oh, it's terrifying.
Susan, why don't we go to our bedrooms? We're both very tired, which may be why we're seeing things that cannot be.
Yes, as you say, Cousin Amy.
After a good night's rest, we'll both of us laugh at what we think we've just seen.
Yes, but we did see it.
Imagination plays strange tricks sometimes. Oh, come, let's admit it. We've had Cousin Cuthbert on our minds ever since Mr. Willoughby showed us the portrait. It naturally follows
that we should see his head and face floating in the air outside in the dark among the branches of that old tree. Oh, it doesn't make sense, Cousin Amy.
We'll talk about it in the morning. No, just take your lamp and follow me up to our bedrooms.
Yes, I'm sure you know best.
And all these wonderful portraits. Good night, Colonel Benjamin Frush. I'm sure General Pepperwell was very proud of you.
And good night to you, Cousin Elbridge, President of Frush University.
And sleep well, Cousin Josiah. And you... There's that whistling again. Cousin Susan, hold your lamp a little higher. Yes, onto the portrait of Cuthbert Frush.
What is it? What's wrong?
Well, I can't tell whether it's the lamplight throwing strange shadows or... Do you see what I see?
It just cannot be.
Tell me what you see.
It's the same portrait of Cuthbert Frush we saw this afternoon.
But with one horrible difference.
His body is there.
But poor Cousin Cuthbert has no head.
Just who is, or was, Cuthbert Frush? Is it possible that in some way his spirit still lingers on in the old Frush mansion? Can we say with the poet Longfellow, all houses wherein men have lived and died are haunted houses. Through the open doors, the harmless phantoms on their errands glide with feet that make no sound upon the floor. We'll learn more when I return shortly with Act Two.
I want that sinus medicine.
Headache tablet?
No, the sinus medicine that relieves headache and congestion, internal sinus pressure and post-nasal drip.
You mean Sinoff?
Exactly.
Compare Sinoff tablets with anything you've ever taken for sinus. No sinus tablet you can buy relieves more symptoms. Sinoff gives you a full dose of pure aspirin plus a powerful sinus drainer. Sinoff works fast to help sinus pain while you drain.
S-I-N-E-O-F-F.
Sinoff, the sinus medicines in the bright red box. Take when needed, only as directed.
When it leaves, well, I want to drink one thing.
James Harris's ambition is to leave his children a family home. He's going to do it because he and others in Scott, Arkansas, have started a housing cooperative with a grant from the Campaign for Human Development.
I mean, I leave him no money, but I can leave him Someone they can lay their hands. Say this is mine.
The Campaign for Human Development. The United States Catholic Conference.
This is a routine gun trace request.
Some 3,000 calls a month like this one come into the National Gun Tracing Center from law enforcement agencies throughout the country requesting information on guns used in crimes.
Hello, this is ATF with the gun trace request.
We check with both national and foreign manufacturers and forward the dealer's name to the requesting agency. In some cases, we can do this in a matter of minutes.
I will hold. I'm sorry to report that the owner said the gun was stolen about 6 months ago, and he forgot to report it.
I'm Rex Davis, director of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. Gun tracing is often the only means of solving a crime. If you secure your gun against theft, you make our job and that of your local police that much easier. Place a complete description of your gun with your other important papers. And if your gun is stolen, report it at once to the police or ATF. Remember, your stolen gun threatens everyone.
The cellars of the Frush Mansion are sound, cool, and dry, like the crypts of ancient churches. Several mornings after taking possession of the old house, Susan and Amy Frush decide to explore the vaults of these underground labyrinths. A recess in the thickness of one of the walls has yielded a small chest bound with hoops of iron. Slowly and carefully, the two ladies are doing their best to pry it open.
Careful, Cousin Amy. We don't want to break it.
I think I have it. It's coming. Ah, there.
Goodness gracious. This chest hasn't been opened, I'm sure, in almost 100 years.
Or more. Isn't this exciting? Let's see what we have. A couple of newspapers and pamphlets.
Oh, careful how you handle them. They'll fall apart in your hand.
And three packets of letters. Yellow with time.
Oh, look at that little package, tied into a small bundle with a sprig of pale blue ribbon. Oh, sweet. Anything else?
Oh, I had hoped it might be filled with old golden guineas.
Hoarded by some ancient miser of a Frush.
Oh, why not? Or even a handful of ducats, doubloons, pieces of eight.
Stored by an unknown pirate ancestor of ours.
Or some evil captain of a privateer. Captain Frush. Who roamed the seven seas and preyed upon his helpless victims.
Oh, Amy. You are an incurable romantic.
Only a lot of old papers and letters.
You know you can't wait to read them any more than I can.
True. Only I dare not handle them myself. They're so delicate.
This is a job for the minister. Mm. Not only does the Reverend Mr. Patton preach an excellent sermon, but he's also president of the town's historical society. Mm.
If anybody can help us with these, Mr. Patton can, I'm sure.
Oh, they should provide many interesting evenings before the fireplace. Cousin Amy, has it occurred to you that we might find things in these letters that we might not want to learn about?
Well, like what?
I'm not quite sure.
But if we should discover something bad about an ancestor of ours, any one of them...
I don't think I would want to know.
Well, suppose it was something about our mysterious cousin Cuthbert. Something really naughty. Wouldn't you want to know about him?
No, I'd have to think about it.
Oh, no, you wouldn't. And neither would I. If anything human happened with Cuthbert or any other Frush, with all those dignified pillars of society in the entry hall, I would be delighted.
What, Cousin Amy? Really?
And the first thing I do in the morning is to get in touch with the Reverend Mr. Amos Pettingill Patton. We'll need his help with these letters. What's the matter?
Keep your voice very low, Cousin Amy.
Well, I just heard you scream.
I know. There is a man in this room.
Here? In your bedroom? Oh, how is that possible?
I don't know, but just a moment ago, there was someone in this room.
Who?
I told you. A man.
Where? Under the bed?
No, just standing here. Oh, please. Hold me, cousin. I'm shaking like a leaf.
Oh, there, there. Now, just try to be calm. Why don't we both just sit here at the foot of the bed? Now, would you like a glass of water?
No, thank you.
Now, tell me quietly. This man that you saw, he was standing, you say? Where?
Right there, in the middle of the room. He was standing before my dressing glass.
Were the lights still on?
Oh, no, I'd lowered them. I'd not yet gone to bed.
Why do you suppose he was standing before your dressing glass? To look at himself? To admire himself?
Oh, I see you don't believe me.
Of course I believe
you. He had his back to the glass. He was standing there, staring, looking at me in my nightgown and wrapper. Oh, I was so terrified I couldn't move. Oh, I'm so ashamed. I'm so ashamed.
Oh, now, please try to remain calm. What did he look like?
Oh, his clothes were strangest fashion from another age. Knee breeches, long stockings, a lace ruffle about his neck, a cocked hat, that sort of thing. Like the painting.
Yes, yes, yes. His face, what did he look like?
Oh, well, the light wasn't bright enough for me to make out the features. I was too frightened to notice. But I do remember that the neck was bent, sort of. The head was tilted way over to the one side.
To one side?
Oh, it was awful, as though the head were just barely attached to the rest of the body. You've got to stay here with me. I will not stay in this room alone.
Of course, I wouldn't think of leaving you.
Cousin Amy, we're not alone in this house. There is a third person here somewhere.
Just lie down now and close your eyes.
I know what I'm talking about.
It may well be that all our talk about those old letters we discovered...
I did not imagine anything. I saw him.
The walls we touch in this old house, the floors we walk on, all have secrets. All secrets. Some remembered, some forgotten. We'll both get used to it, I'm sure, after a while. Now, close your eyes and try to get some rest.
Well, good night, Cousin Amy. And thank you.
Not at all. Until you fall asleep, I'll sit here in this old rocking chair. Merciful heavens!
What's wrong?
There is a man sitting in this rocking chair, and I'm sitting in his lap.
No!
And he's whispering in my ear.
Oh, what's he saying?
He's saying, I beg your pardon, Cousin Amy, but you're sitting on my lap. What was that?
The door just slammed shut.
There isn't a bit of wind tonight. It's in the rocking chair. Look at it. It's rocking. Back and forth. All by itself.
Oh, let's get out of here. Quickly.
We'll lock ourselves in my room tonight.
Wait for me, Amy. I'm coming right with you.
A bit more bacon, Mr. Patton. Another egg?
No, thank you, my dear. Thank you so much. Oh, bless my soul, perfectly delightful breakfast, Miss Amy.
I'm Susan, Mr. Patton.
I'm Amy.
Oh, yes, of course, of course. So you are. You've already told me twice now, haven't you? One of my worst failings.
About the letters and papers we found in the chest, Mr. Patton.
Yes, indeed. I've gone through almost half of them. Should complete a first reading of all of them by tomorrow.
More coffee, Mr. Patton?
Oh, thank you, Miss...
Susan. Have you found anything at all thus far that might be of any interest to us?
Well, that depends a bit on what you ladies would consider interesting. Doesn't it?
Well, we were just curious as to whether you might have come across anything that might show one or two of them to be a little less...
A little less proper? A little more human, shall we say? Little chinks in their armor?
Exactly.
Oh, well, nothing really shocking. Just something that might possibly explain... certain things.
Well, there's nothing like that in the letters as yet. What certain things, may I ask?
Amy means, have you found anything in the letters that might tell something about...
Cuthbert Frush.
Who?
Cousin Cuthbert Frush.
Oh. That rascal.
Rascal? Why do you call him a rascal?
I thought everybody knew it. It's practically town history.
But when we asked Mr. Willoughby about Cuthbert, he did not seem eager to provide us with any information.
Oh, well, now Thomas Willoughby is a bit of a stick in the mud, isn't he?
Mr. Patton, certain strange things have been happening here in this house.
Things that we do not understand. Things that we are convinced may possibly stem from whatever may have happened to the man that you call a rascal.
Exactly what has been happening?
For the time being, that must remain our little secret, my cousin's and mine.
In the meantime, it is of the utmost urgency that we know everything there is to know about Cousin Cuthbert. Why did he die so young? And how did he die?
Well, my dear, dear ladies, the fact is that Cuthbert Frush, born in 1747, as I recall, came to his end in 1775 at the age of 28. Hanged by the neck until he was quite dead. On that old oak tree, there, outside the window.
Take your customary after-dinner nap, Cousin Susan.
I couldn't, dear Amy. I'm too nervous. First, there's this dreadful storm, and then the Reverend Patton's expected almost any moment. With the rest of the letters. He did say he'd be here at 8.
Yes, he did.
Oh, I can hardly wait. I am so excited.
And so am I.
Amy, I cannot get used to the idea that darling Cousin Cuthbert was hanged.
On a stout limb of that old oak tree out there, where we saw his head the other night.
That's why it was so dreadfully twisted all the way over to one side.
Because hanging breaks the neck.
True. Don't say it.
Well, it's a most peculiar effect.
And that also explains that look of pitiful sadness in those young, hauntingly beautiful eyes.
Indeed.
Mr. Patton's usually so prompt.
Cousin Susan, have you the slightest suspicion, the faintest inkling of what our gallant young cousin might possibly have done to deserve the fate of dangling from the end of a stout rope?
None whatsoever. Oh, let us hope we shall now find out. The poor, poor boy.
Bless my heavenly soul. It was quite a night, quite a night. Isn't it, Miss Amy?
Susan.
Oh, yeah, of course, of course.
May I take your raincoat and hat?
Oh, thank you indeed, Miss, Amy. Correct?
Correct. The papers, the letters, you brought them, of course.
Right here, wrapped in this oilskin. Here we are. And I have good news for you both. The most splendid news.
Oh, shall we sit here, close to the fire?
Thank you. Now, if I may, I should like to begin with a question.
Yes, yes, Mr. Patton.
Truthfully, why are you two dear ladies so anxious to find out whatever you can about an ancestor of yours who's been dead for over 125 years? Since 1775. Particularly since you think there may have been something, shall we say, a trifle naughty in his background?
Oh, we've already told you, Mr. Patton. We want to know everything there is to know about all our ancestors.
I think I understand.
Mr. Patton, what would you say if we were to tell you that although Cuthbert may have been hanged, that in some strange way we cannot explain, Cuthbert is still with us?
In spirit, of course. As are all the Frushers.
Cuthbert is still here, living with us in this very house. We've seen him.
And he's trying to tell us something.
He wants something from us.
Well, bless my soul.
You don't believe us, do you?
Well, you must admit the idea does stretch one's powers of belief just a trifle.
Then come with us to the outer hallway right this minute.
As you wish, Miss,
Amy, we want you to see something.
Delighted, delighted, my dear.
Now, is the light good enough for you to see?
Why, certainly.
All right, then. Cast your eyes up at that oil painting of Cuthbert Frush.
I know it well. I've seen it so many times.
Oh, no. No, I will not believe it. The painting is an absolute blank. There's absolutely nothing on the canvas.
First the head was gone. Now it's the whole body. Oh, Mr. Patton, will you please come back with us into the parlor and be good enough to tell us what you found in the paper?
And why Cousin Cuthbert was put to death?
It might help us to understand why this third person is still hanging about the house.
It's said that even the most welcome guest gets to be a bit of a nuisance after the first 3 days. And that applies in some measure even to the engaging spirit of Cousin Cuthbert. The longer he stays, the more demanding his presence seems to become. For he has presented a dark and challenging mystery to his two spinster cousins. They are determined to unravel Cuthbert's 125-year-old secret. And so am I. We'll learn more about that secret when I return shortly with Act 3.
Are you an unpublished author? Do you have a book-length manuscript ready or almost ready for publication? Or do you know of anyone else who is an unpublished author? If so, Vantage Press invites you to write to a leading New York publisher for a free illustrated brochure titled To the Author in Search of a Publisher. It explains how you may have your manuscript printed and published in a matter of months. Just write to GPO, Box 1414, New York, New York. Whether your subject is fiction, nonfiction, poetry, or even scientific, specialized, or controversial, this 52-page brochure shows you how to arrange for prompt publication. To get your copy, write to GPO, Box 1414, New York, New York. That's GPO, Box 1414, New York, New York. If this is your first book, you'll find this free brochure especially valuable and informative. Write to GPO, Box 1414, New York, New York. GPO, Box 1414, New York, New York.
You are in Brazil, northeastern Brazil. Far from tropical Amazon jungles and far from the bright lights of big cities. This area is often stricken by drought. Life is hard. And childhood diseases such as measles are sometimes fatal. A child suffering from malnutrition or dehydration cannot fight disease. But hope lives in Brazil. Project Hope, introducing new ideas in healthcare, such as well baby clinics. In a pilot program operated jointly by Project Hope and Brazilian doctors and nurses, a group of 40 babies has undergone monthly checkups for a year. Their mothers were instructed on good hygiene, nutrition, and immunization. All of these babies lived, while typically 5 of the 40 would have died during the first year. Hope lives because you help. Keep it up. Write Project Hope, Room A, Washington, D.C.
A footstep, a low throbbing in the walls, a noise of falling weights that never fell, weird whispers, bells that ring without a hand, door handles turned when none was at the door, and bolted doors that opened of themselves. So did the poet Tennyson describe some of the possible goings-on in a house shared by a ghost. Amy and Susan Frush believe in what they see and hear. Their present task is to convince the Reverend Patton, if they can.
Now do you believe us, Mr. Patton? Do you believe that in some inexplicable way, Cousin Cuthbert has left that picture frame and is wandering about the house?
Cousin Amy and I have actually seen him.
And you think he's staying on because he wants you to do something for
him? And it would help tremendously if we could know why he was hanged.
Have you come across anything in the letters? Was there an unhappy love affair that ended in his committing murder?
Did he kill someone? A jealous husband?
Or was he a dashing pirate who was captured by the King's Navy after a bloody battle on the high seas?
What unspeakable
unspeakable things did he do to deserve to be hanged? Oh, please tell us.
I will, if you'll give me a chance. It was nothing quite as romantic as you suggest.
Oh, what was it, Mr. Patton?
Now, you both read your early American history. Think back. What was one of the weightiest things on the minds of the American colonists? One of the things, in fact, that led to the American Revolution.
Paying taxes they considered unfair.
Taxation without representation.
Right on the head, Miss...
Amy.
Amy. And the only way a patriotic colonist could show his defiance of what he considered inequitable taxes put upon him by the British was to smuggle articles like tea, brandy, rum, molasses into the country without paying the taxes.
You mean Cousin Cuthbert was a smuggler?
A good many of the townspeople here, being so near the sea, made a very bold living out of smuggling.
Is that why they hanged him?
If they lived by smuggling, sad it is to say that some of them proudly and defiantly died for it.
Oh, like Cousin Cuthbert.
Several of these letters speak of his smuggling activities. He was admired here as one of the best, until he was unlucky enough to be caught and hanged for what was then considered a capital crime.
Hanged for a little thing like smuggling.
Yes, in the eyes of King George III's officers, it was not such a little thing. Cuthbert did commit an error, a human error, but as we know, to err is human. To forgive, divine.
Of course. That is exactly.
What's what exactly?
I know what's bothering Cuthbert.
You do?
The first thing we must do is to visit his grave in the old churchyard. The way I look at it, the only crime Cuthbert was really guilty of was the crime of being caught. Oh, Colonel. Hold it. Good boy. The entrance to the churchyard must be through that gate.
So it is.
Cousin Susan, here's the fresh section of the burying ground.
Oh, just look at all those beautiful headstones and monuments.
You know, it's hard to make out some of the names. Who's that?
That's Benjamin Frush, the soldier.
Oh, here is the grave of dear Cuthbert. Cousin Susan, put the little vase of flowers at the foot of the grave.
They are lovely. Mm. They should please him.
Do you mind if I begin?
No, not at all.
Dear Cuthbert Frush, Cousin Susan and I know why they hanged you. We would like you to know that not only do we not look down upon you for what you did, but that we do not in any way disapprove of your actions. We are sorry, of course, that you were caught
and hanged on the oak behind the parlor
at the tender age of only 28.
We also sense that you are unhappy and restless in this grave. You want to be forgiven, don't you?
You want peace and rest. And that pleading look in your eyes tells us you're trying to say something. That possibly you want our help.
What is it you want us to do?
The vase of flowers?
Toppled over and broke.
Cousin Cuthbert, is this your way of telling us you hear us?
Oh, answer us, Cuthbert. Talk to us.
Quiet,
talk.
Cousin Susan, shh. Oh, dear. Well, that was sweet of you. Thank you, Cuthbert.
What was that?
Cousin Cuthbert just kissed me, ever so gently.
He did?
On the forehead.
Oh.
Yes, Cousin Cuthbert.
Is he saying something?
Shh. Oh, of course, dear Cuthbert. Now I know exactly the kind of thing you want us to do.
What is it? What did he say?
Cousin Susan, I hope you won't mind staying alone for the next few days. I'm leaving in the morning.
Where to? Why? What are you planning to do?
Oh, just for a few days. A very important errand.
Oh, but we have the 4th of July celebration coming up. We've invited Mr. Willoughby and Mr. Patton.
Oh, I have no intention of disappointing them. Oh, don't worry. I'll be back by the 4th of July.
There you are, ma'am.
You're sure you've packed them well? I have a long trip.
Yes, ma'am, I have indeed. Just be sure to keep the package dry. Away from any heat, of course.
Oh, you're sure I'll be able to manage them myself?
Just take usual precautions.
Oh, I adore the red, white, and blue ribbon you've tied it with. Mm. So appropriate for this time of the year, the 4th of July.
We try to please, ma'am.
On the day we commemorate the birthday of our country's independence, it is my hope that a certain person will be celebrating his independence, too. That his spirit will become as free as our country's was in 1776.
Yes, indeed. That'll be $3.50, ma'am. Thank you, and come back soon.
Have another marshmallow, Mr. Patton? You, Mr. Willoughby?
Ah, what a wonderful way of celebrating the 4th. Don't you agree, Mr. Patton?
Oh, I certainly do, Mr. Willoughby. Fine dinner, now this bonfire. Keeps reminding me of the famous words of John Adams on the eve of July 4th, 1776. He said that the anniversary of independence should always be remembered with pomp and parade, with shows, games, sports, bells, bonfires, and fireworks.
Cousin Susan?
Yes?
Gentlemen? I would like to contribute one of those items to our celebration. These.
What have you got there? What's in that pretty package?
Chinese firecrackers. And these are Roman candles. And here are pinwheels. And these are called salutes.
Well, firecrackers and fireworks displays? Now, where on earth did you get them?
Don't you know it's against the law to bring those things into the state?
Shall we toss the firecrackers into the bonfire one at a time? Look, here's a package for you, Cousin Susan.
Thank you.
One for you, Mr. Patton.
Thank you.
And one for you, Mr. Willoughby.
Oh, well, now.
Toss them into the fire.
Listen to them go.
Oh, bless my soul, Miss Amy. What have you done?
That's why you went away to buy these.
How can anyone properly celebrate the 4th of July without firecrackers or fireworks?
Now, you journeyed somewhere to another state where you could buy them legally.
And brought them into this state illegally. Oh, toss some more of them into the fire. All of you.
In the eyes of the law, Miss Frush, what you have done would be considered smuggling.
Wouldn't it? Isn't that perfectly wonderful?
Amy, you've become a smuggler. Why?
Well, to show Cousin Cuthbert that we Frushes are perfectly capable of taking the same kind of risk he did. Capable of the same kind of bold deed he's been hanged for. You see, he wanted us to perform a punishable act of righteous danger, as he once did. I did what I did to prove to him that we considered his act a human one. As you said, Mr. Patton, to err is human, to forgive, divine.
But that was quite a risk you took.
If it works, it will have been worth it.
Cousin Amy, look, up in the old oak tree.
It's Cousin Cuthbert, the whole of him.
And for the first time, Cuthbert, since we've known you, your eyes are not sad.
In fact, you're actually smiling. Oh, Cousin Cuthbert, you are beautiful.
He's beginning to fade. I can see right through him.
He's getting fainter and fainter. Oh, please stay, Cousin Cuthbert.
He's going away.
He's gone.
I rather think I shall miss him.
It was comforting to have a handsome young man about the house, wasn't it? Even if he was Mr. Willoughby, Mr. Patton?
Yes, Miss...
Amy. You must think our behavior a trifle peculiar.
Well...
If you saw or heard anything unusual, do forget it, please.
I didn't see a thing.
Did you, Mr. Patton?
Oh, no. Not a thing. I didn't hear anything either.
It's getting a bit cool, isn't it? Shall we have our coffee inside in the parlor?
The coffee will only take a moment.
Cousin Susan, yes. Gentlemen, look.
What is it?
The portrait. The painting of Cuthbert Fresh.
Well, bless my soul.
It's whole again.
The four portrait is back on the canvas, the way it was to begin with.
Hold your lamp a bit higher.
And look closely. Do you notice any other difference?
The eyes.
Of course, the eyes. Where they were once rather sad and mournful, they now seem to have a twinkle in them.
And so they do.
Cousin Amy.
Yes?
Did you see what I saw?
Cousin Cuthbert just winked at us.
A philosopher has said that the family is one of nature's masterpieces. And loyalty among members of a family, though sometimes rare, is something devoutly to be wished for. The cousins, Susan and Amy Frush, have shown that loyalty, even if it was only for a ghostly relative. Perhaps they were aware that Benjamin Franklin kept saying in Philadelphia in 1776, "We must all hang together, or most assuredly, we shall all hang separately." I'll be back shortly.
The following fable is presented to make you want to buy a Buick.
From Mom, I got my practical side.
Christmas? Oh, just get me a nice mop, son.
From Dad, I got my fun-loving side.
Go fly a kite, kid.
So, being practical and fun-loving, naturally, I got a Buick Skylark. Being the only V6-powered American compact, it's very practical. And being a Buick, it's a lot of fun to drive. As Mom says...
A wise decision, son.
Or, as my father would say...
Nice car, kid. Let's go shoot some pool.
Buick. Dedicated to the free spirit in just about everyone.
Look, if I am drinking too much, that's my problem. It doesn't hurt anyone but me.
And your wife.
Oh, cut it out.
And your kids. And the people you work with. And your friends.
If someone close to you has a drinking problem, it's your problem, too. Help him. Write Alcohol, Box 2345, Rockville, Maryland, 20852. A public service message by this station and the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism.
It's interesting to think that Yankee Doodle was originally a British tune. But it was not long before the Americans took it over as their own song and invented lyrics like Yankee Doodle, keep it up. Yankee Doodle Dandy, mind the music and the step, and with the girls, be handy. Do you suppose that Cuthbert may have been thinking those particular lines when he whistled his way into the hearts of Miss Susan Frush and Miss Amy Frush? Our cast included E.V. Juster, Marion Seldes, Arnold Moss, and Court Benson. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
I spend almost every other weekend down here. Oh, I love it.
It is garish, though, Mad, don't you think?
Of course. That's what makes it delightful.
Madge.
Yes?
Look, in the front of that shop, the pictures.
What about them?
I've got to have a closer look.
And what's the hurry? What is it?
Look at this painting, Madge.
Oh,
yes. You see it, too.
Well, and now, really, it's a good likeness, but
even to the little mole on his neck.
Oh.
Madge, this is a painting of Roger. An exact likeness. And look at the date below the artist's name. August of this year.
Yes, I see.
That was 3 months after the accident.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Sinoff, the sinus medicines, and Buick Motor Division.
This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
When you shop at Tradewell, you know that they provide the best selection, the best service, and at the best possible price. Tradewell helps you stretch your food dollar without sacrificing quality. Some of the specials you'll find at your friendly Tradewell this week are USDA Choice Boneless Beef Top Sirloin Steaks, $2.49 a pound. Banquet Frozen Meat Pies, Chicken, Turkey, Tuna, or Beef, 8-ounce package, 4 for 88 cents. Red Ripe Beefsteak Tomatoes, 28 cents a pound. Hunt's Tomato Ketchup, 32-ounce bottle, 68 cents. Shop Tradewell for quality and value. Remember, your friendly Tradewell is headquarters for USDA Prime Beef.
Hear the difference. Bright and beautiful music. KIXI, Seattle.
CBS News. President Ford has arrived in Los Angeles for a weekend of more speeches and some relaxation. I'm Ann Crosman reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Mr. Ford flew into Los Angeles after a busy day of appearances in Oklahoma City. Mike Landa of CBS radio station KNX has a report.
Air Force One touched down at Los Angeles International Airport Friday night, then taxied to a remote section of the facility where local dignitaries, including Mayor Tom Bradley, were waiting to greet the President and Mrs. Ford. Security was tight. Only news people were allowed in the area, and they were kept at least 150 feet from the plane. It was 2 weeks ago, during Mr. Ford's last California trip, that a member of the Manson family allegedly pointed a gun at the president. The White House party did not linger upon arriving in Los Angeles. The chief executive and Mrs. Ford moved carefully down the ramp into a waiting limousine. A motorcade led by 13 Los Angeles motorcycle officers sped off for Century City, where the president will spend the night. Mr. Ford's Southern California visit will include a stop at Pepperdine University in Malibu Saturday and a speech in Anaheim on Sunday. In between, the chief executive will fly to Monterey in Northern California for a round of golf at Pebble Beach. This is Mike Landa for CBS News in Los Angeles.
The latest on Patricia Hearst in a minute.
You may feel it's an embarrassing subject, but since one out of every three people suffers hemorrhoid symptoms at some time, you should know about Preparation H. Preparation H gives prompt, temporary relief from occasional pain and itch in many cases. But Preparation H does more. Actually helps shrink swelling of hemorrhoidal tissues caused by inflammation. With so many having the problem, it's comforting to know that Preparation H helps shrink swelling of hemorrhoidal tissues. Ointment or suppositories. Use only as directed.
When the leaves come off, put the collar on. The two-in-one collar from Hearts.
Your dog can get ticks anytime, so keep a Hearts two-in-one collar on year-round. For every tick it kills now, up to 2,000 ticks won't be born this spring. To really kill ticks and fleas, the Hearts 2-in-1 collar is always in season.
When the leaves come off, put the collar on. The 2-in-1 collar from Hearts.
Patricia Hearst and her companions, Emily and William Harris, were back in San Mateo County Jail Friday night. A federal judge revoked bail for Ms. Hearst, and another hearing is set for next Tuesday. Ms. Hearst is charged with bank robbery and possession of firearms. Emily and William Harris are being held on $500,000 bail each, but they're still in jail because they cannot raise bail money. They will have another hearing next Friday. Ms. Hearst was picked up by police on Thursday, 19 months after she was kidnapped. The UN General Assembly has voted unanimously to ask the Security Council to reconsider membership applications of North and South Vietnam. The U.S. abstained in the vote. Last month in the Security Council, the U.S. vetoed the Vietnam applications on grounds that the Council had refused to consider South Korea's application. U.S. Ambassador Daniel Moynihan indicates it will stand by that position.
the United States is ready for the admission of all qualified states, not now members of the UN. As the goal of universality comes nearer and nearer, our hopes for universality intensify. Unhappily, though, there are those fully qualified whose admission is being denied for political motives.
Moynihan used the same argument when explaining his vetoes of the Vietnam applications in the council last month. Air Force Sergeant Leonard Matlevich says he will appeal a decision made on Friday by a 3-member Air Force board. The board recommended that Matlevich be given a general discharge because he is a homosexual. A general discharge is defined as separation from the Air Force under honorable conditions. Matlevich admitted he was a homosexual 6 months ago, forcing the first known test case of its kind. He is a 12-year veteran of the Air Force with an unblemished record. More news coming up.
Brian, why is September 12th through September 20th circled on my calendar?
That's when I take you to the Kasbah.
Be serious. It's in red, so it's a really special occasion.
Okay, that's when you take me to the Kasbah.
Brian, think September 12th through 20th.
No sale on the Kasbah, huh?
That's it. A sale. The special Hanes sale, September 12th through 20th.
What's so special about it?
Listen, any day Hanes puts all their hosiery on sale is a special occasion.
Give your legs the elegance of Hanes at the special Hanes sale now through September 20th. Hanes Ultra Sheer, Hanes Everyday, Hanes Alive Support Pantyhose, and Hanes Stockings, all at especially low prices.
Hanes will make you smooth and silky, shapely, sexy. If you've got a special gent, cashing on the big event, gentlemen, prefer Hanes.
The special Hanes sale now through September 20th at Fauna Department and apparel stores everywhere.
Arthur Burns, who heads the Federal Reserve Board, says the way unemployment compensation is set up now, people are not encouraged to go out and find jobs. So Burns is proposing that unemployment benefits, which now run up to 65 weeks, be cut down to about 13 weeks, and then, he says, be given only to people who actively search for regular jobs. Burns is also proposing that the government offer the unemployed public service jobs and pay a bit below the federal minimum wage. Burns made his suggestions on Friday night in a speech at the University of Georgia in Athens. I'm Ann Crosman, CBS News.